When you're sick, every minute counts. So don't go anywhere. Go to dispatchhealth.com where high-quality medical care comes directly to you. No getting out of a sick bed. No crazy driving to an emergency room. No endless paperwork. No hospital waiting rooms. Visit dispatchhealth.com to learn about our medical professionals that make house calls. Dispatch Health is covered by Medicare and most major insurance. Go to dispatchhealth.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold Golden and Gregory.
Welcome to Energy Matters, a show about how you can save money on your utility bills, use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable lifestyle. Here's your host, veteran energy regulator and clean energy expert, Commissioner Tim Echols.
Thank you, Scott Slade. It is always great to be saving money on your power bill, to use technology wisely, and live a more sustainable life. I'm Tim Echols, the host of Energy Matters, and it doesn't matter whether you're in Decatur, Georgia, or Tokyo, Japan, or Valdez, Alaska, saving money on your power bill is fantastic. And Casey, we have a guest today who's been all over the world, and we're going to talk about his work at Georgia Tech. But Tim Lewin is our guest today. I've been wanting to have him on the show forever, and so we finally have him today. I'm excited about having him on the show.
Yeah, me too. Tim, I was reading our guest's bio on the Georgia Tech page this morning, and very impressive. But I want to share this excerpt by way of introduction, because I think it's going to set up the conversation for the rest of this show. So it says that Dr. Lewin, his interests lie in the areas of acoustics, fluid mechanics, and combustion. And it then says, if you like making fire, making noise, and saving the planet all at the same time, these are all great problems to work on. So I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, Dr. Tim Lewin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. It's really exciting to be here. And I've seen you all over the place. And so it's fun to be hosted here.
Yeah, you're from Cincinnati originally, and I haven't spent that much time in Cincinnati. Spent more time, I guess, in Kentucky. That's right across the river, right?
Right across the river, yeah. I grew up in the tri-state.
I did name one of my sons after Rutherford Hayes, the former president of the U.S., who was from Cincinnati. And I named my fifth son David Rutherford Echols because I really admired President Hayes for a couple of reasons. One, he, as slaves came across that river in the Underground Railroad, he would represent them in court because they still had to go to court in order to gain their freedom. And he was an attorney and served pro bono to be able to help those slaves gain their freedom, the ones that were able to escape. And then he had a wife named Lucy, and I'm a Baptist, and we don't drink alcohol in our family. And his wife, when he was president, was nicknamed Lemonade Lucy because she would not allow alcohol to be served in the White House. So there was a lot of things I liked about this guy, including how he treated Southerners after the war. He basically gave the Confederate money some value and allowed folks to be able to cash that in once he became president. So there was just a lot of things about him that made him a very unique president. So he's one of my favorites.
Yeah, good. You know, they have a beautiful new museum right on the Ohio River, and you around all those issues and the Underground Railroad, and it's incredible. You just stand there on the Ohio River and you think of what that line used to represent.
Yeah, that's right. It was
really
a line.
Gives one pause.
It was freedom. Tim, you and I, we saw each other in Japan on a trip I made, not at the expense of the state, but it was from really through the Japan Foundation. I went over with a number of Georgia legislators, a whole delegation of folks, and you know, the Japanese, they've been wearing face masks before face masks were cool. I mean, they were wearing them then. They've been wearing them for a long time because of their commitment to hygiene. Now, here we are, not too far after our trip over there, and now, you know, it's just commonplace here in America. I wonder, I mean, I took away a lot of things from Japan, including their commitment to hygiene, the graciousness of their culture, and, you know, how they give gifts to others. And I've really started giving gifts to people when I meet them, mainly because of what I learned in Japan. And then, of course, their commitment to precision and just how they take anybody's technology and they make it better. What were some of the things that you took away from your trip to Japan, and why were you there?
Yeah, I was there to visit a company called Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, which actually has a large manufacturing facility right outside of Savannah in Pooler, Georgia. And they make some of the largest electric power plants in the world. They're called gas turbines. So really, really sophisticated technology. And so we have one of the best labs in the world working on cleaning those devices up, reducing their environmental impact, reducing their costs. And so we routinely partner with major global companies. And so we have had a very healthy, robust relationship with Mitsubishi. And I was over there just for sort of some discussions and some tours and some project partnerships. Very, very impressive facilities they have. Really, really neat things that they were doing.
How, I mean, you've got four girls, and one of your daughters was with you, right?
I did. I had daughter number three. So we homeschool our children. And one of the reasons that we did that was because I do travel a lot. I really wanted them to have the opportunity to see the world with me. And so I took my daughter with me. She wore a hard hat, toured the Takasago Machine Works, just like I did. And my hosts were very, very gracious, and they had a wonderful time having her with us.
Yeah. Was there any takeaways that you brought back to your family in terms of the way that the Japanese live their life and do business?
Well, I think, like you said, just the general, the graciousness, their hospitality, just the clear desire to make you at ease and to make you comfortable at home just really, really struck me and stood out.
Yeah, Casey, have you had a chance to go to Japan, or have you dealt with any Japanese companies in your professional career?
You know, I haven't had a chance to go. My mother-in-law spent a number of weeks in Japan years ago and talks very glowingly about it, like the two of you are. So I certainly would love to go over there. You know, the only kind of quasi overlap that I've had professionally is that there's a company here in the Atlanta area that had some conversations with as Japan moved to deregulate their electric market a couple of years ago. But that was sort of a third degree connection there, but very interesting given everything that happened with Fukushima and the way that they were, you know, dealing with electric generation at the time.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I'll just throw out one more thing. It was kind of fun because, you know, obviously the homeschooling is a different, there's different levels of prevalence around the world, but I was actually there partially for a technical conference, and my daughter had all her school books just strewn around the table, and all these delegates from around the world, they got quite a kick out of looking at that with her geometry spread out.
I'd love to get into the Fukushima accident and the impact that it's had not only on their gas and electric market, but the impact worldwide. But before we do that, Tim, you had a chance to work for the U.S. Forest Service during the summer. And I know I had a son that was stationed with the Coast Guard in Alaska, so I had a chance to visit him. But tell us about your experience with the Forest Service and kind of what you did. It sounds really cool.
Yeah, so I've always really loved the outdoors. Actually, my father grew up in sort of very wild country in northern British Columbia. And so I've always loved that. And so I had the opportunity to work for the U.S. Forest Service in North Idaho. And that gave me a chance to get sort of my foot in the door for this position in Alaska. And so a lot of the work that is done by the Forest Service, whether it's surveying or fish counting or wildlife counting, things like that, is done by seasonal employees over the summer. So wonderful job. I did it for five seasons, and Global Positioning System was just becoming online, and the Forest Service was mapping out all of their roads on GPS. So for two summers, I still can't believe I got to pinch myself. I got paid by the U.S. taxpayer to ride around on a mountain bike on Alaskan Forest Service roads with a GPS receiver. Wonderful, wonderful job.
That sounds like a great job.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What did you find in terms of the difference between between working in Idaho and working in Alaska, both summertime jobs. But was there any really significant difference to you, maybe in terms of the wildlife or other things that you would see as you were out and about, or things that you were being careful about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so everyone had to be certified on a rifle to work where I worked in Alaska. In fact, we worked near an area called the Annan Bear Observatory, which is a major bear observatory. People would come up studying for graduate degrees, bears, and they would have to go through the certification. It's also the northernmost rainforest in the world, and so enormous old growth trees. And so everything there, it's the Tongass National Forest. So all the trees there, except for the first 300 feet from the shoreline, which the Russians logged, is basically virgin timber.
Wow, that's incredible. And then you wound up coming to Atlanta, to Georgia Tech, to pursue a graduate degree. Just in our last minute of this segment, tell us a little bit about that experience, moving from Cincinnati to Atlanta. Obviously, both decent-sized cities, but living here and your experience at Georgia Tech as a graduate student.
Yeah, so, I grew up in Cincinnati, sort of on the edge on a small farm, and then I went to a small college in Michigan. So it was a big life experience for me to move to the big city, move to a big public university. But Georgia Tech has just been, it's been a wonderful place, super hospitable, took great care of me. It's been a wonderful time just both being a student as well as an employee there. I just can't say enough good things about the place.
Well, when we come back, we're going to get into some detail with Dr. Tim Lewin about his work at Georgia Tech. We'll dive maybe a little bit into the Fukushima accident and its impact on the Japanese grid and gas system, and we'll talk about what's going on in Georgia. I'm Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters. We'll be right back.
Energy Matters would like to thank Gas South for its support of the show. Gas South has a no-deposit policy and offers some of the lowest per therm rates in the state. Use the promo code MATTERS for a special deal. Gas South, the difference is good.
Gas South believes in the difference we can all make, like the difference in putting people first and showing that you care. For us, our difference is saving people money with our best rates and no deposit, and the difference we make in our community by taking care of our friends and neighbors and giving back 5% of our profits to help children in need. Learn more about what makes us different at GasSouth.com. Gas South, the difference is good.
BMVW is the place in Metro Atlanta to get your used hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or fully electric car. They're located on the south side near the airport, but it is well worth the drive. Go online to look at their inventory at ev-hybrid.com and set up a time to see the vehicle or even drive it for up to 3 days. I don't know of anywhere else in Metro Atlanta that you can do that. That's ev-hybrid.com, the best deal in town. ev-hybrid.com, ev-hybrid.com. This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by Arnold, Golden, and Gregory, an AmLaw 200 law firm with 180 attorneys in Atlanta and Washington, D.C. They take a business sensibility approach when advising clients. They provide industry knowledge, attention to detail, transparency, and value to help businesses and individuals achieve their definition of success. AGG subscribes to the belief not if, but how. We thank John Gornall and all the attorneys and staff at AGG for sponsoring our show. Hey, this is Tim Echols. We're back on Energy Matters, and energy really does matter. We talk a lot about it on this show. My co-host, as always, Casey Boyce from Decatur. Casey, how's it going?
I'm good, Tim. Good morning to you.
You guys are hunkered down over there. Still, your kids going crazy?
We've found a rhythm for the summer, which is good, and we've also found some online camps, which is also good. So how about your kids? They're older, and you got a grandchild. Are they doing all right with the quarantine?
Yeah. The grandchild spends a couple days with us, and he and I love to go to the Georgia Aquarium. We haven't been able to do that, obviously, during the time they've been shut down. They've reopened, and I've got a season pass, so I love taking him down there. The other kids are, you know, all doing their stuff, and one of my daughters works for the Justice Department. She's in some training up at a undisclosed base in Virginia, and they've had to go up there and quarantine for a couple of weeks before their class comes back. So she was telling us the other day, yeah, they let us out of our room for an hour and 15 minutes in the morning and an hour and 15 minutes at night, you know, to go out and exercise. It almost sounded like prison.
I was going to say, it sounds like a prison camp.
Yeah. So she's ready to get on with it. Our guest today, Dr. Tim Lewin from Georgia Tech. Tim, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, it's great to be here.
Tim, you've got four daughters, you know, and you guys live in town, but you've got some acreage. It sounds like you live kind of in your own forest. You used to work for the Forest Service. Are you getting to see all kind of birds and wildlife on your piece of property over there?
I am. I was on a video conference yesterday, and I saw three deer go running by. It kind of startled me. Yeah, definitely seeing a lot.
Yeah, you work at Georgia Tech. You know, I'm a triple dog, and often wish, if truth be told, and I hate to say this, you know, where people can hear me, but I really think a Georgia Tech degree would have been helpful for me, right? Engineering, maybe an engineering degree. I do a lot with finance. You know, obviously, I mean, a nuclear engineering degree, that would have been good. So, you know, in some ways, I feel like maybe I should have got out a little bit more. How was your time at Georgia Tech? What did you study? What did you learn? And what are you doing now?
Yeah, you bet. So, Tim, well, all I'll say to that is Georgia's a great state, and there's a lot of great, great universities in our state. And we've both benefited from them. But, yeah, so I came to Georgia Tech in 95, and, you know, the plan was just to make a quick jaunt down to Georgia Tech and actually then to move out west and go live in the mountains. But I had a great time in grad school. My plan was to go work for industry, probably work for develop jet engines or things like that. I've always really enjoyed aircraft engines. But Georgia Tech offered me a position. I've been here ever since, never looked back. But, you know, I sort of have two roles at Georgia Tech. One of those is as a faculty member. I teach, I advise students, but I also do quite a bit of research. And my own area is gas turbines, which are, you know, what you use to power airplanes. They're also the dominant source of, you know, electric power in the United States. So really, really interesting pieces of technology. And then...
Yeah, Tim, I had a chance to go up to... It was a Siemens gas turbine plant. You've probably been to it. Mm-hmm. And tour the plant. Had a meeting up there. They had a little conference center. They gave me a tour during the lunch hour. And they were telling me that their gas turbine orders were flat, that they really weren't seeing an enormous number of gas plants being built. And that was a little bit stunning to me because I thought, wow, we've got the fracking revolution going on, you know, all of this gas. But it seems like, you know, it seems like gas turbines have kind of hit their peak. I mean, is that your thinking, or is it just a temporary lull?
Well, it's certainly, I think, the case in places like the United States and Europe. You know, 50% of new electric power nowadays is wind or photovoltaics. You know, gas has a role for stabilizing and backing up the grid, but that's really where we're seeing new installs. On the other hand, in Asia, there continue to be a lot of new sales and new orders. But certainly, I think the future is going to look very, very different than it has the last 20 years in terms of how gas and gas turbines plug into an increasingly renewable grid,
so
increasingly decarbonized grid.
So, Tim, in the introduction, I read a line from your bio, and I think I know how this connects, but maybe you could make it a little bit more explicit for me and for our listeners. You know, that if you like making fire, making noise, and saving the planet, the stuff that you work on with gas turbines and the like is a good thing to be working on. How do those three things connect for you?
Yeah, so, you know, I have the coolest job in the world. I get paid to do combustion, study fire, you know, and when I came to Georgia Tech, when I was learned that was something one could specialize in, I was in. But if you think about kind of where power is coming from, certainly what I'll call non-thermal sources, things that don't do combustion of a fuel, are growing. But if you look at the world that we look at today, probably 90%+ of the power ultimately comes from combustion of some kind of fuel. It could be an alternative fuel, it could be a jet fuel or something like that. So that's kind of the fire part. But increasingly, what the biggest drivers for what we do in the technology area is reducing the environmental impact. And so, you know, a modern gas plant emits really, really low emissions, really, really clean. And we're continually making them cleaner. But what that does is as you make these systems cleaner, you also make them finickier, more finicky. We call those operational problems. And so one of the things that you do, you get these really, really damaging oscillations inside the system, which can wreck it. And that's the making noise part. So a lot of what I do is trying to make these systems less noisy, because that noise can completely destroy the system. Turns out it was the single biggest problem in making rocket engines as well.
Wow. Hey, Tim, I was up in Washington at an event, and one of the FERC commissioners at the time, Commissioner Moeller, was there, and he was expressing his concern that a just-in-time fuel like natural gas, as we convert more and more coal plants over to natural gas, that if it's a just-in-time fuel and you can't store it up, and most of the gas plants don't have a liquefied tank or anything like that, so it is just-in-time, he felt like, you know, if something happens, we have a greater chance of the grid going down. But as we've gone forward with this, and this was a couple years ago, and I've talked to more people in the gas business, I've talked to the people that own the pipelines, we just aren't having disruptions, and it's not happening. His fear is not coming about. I mean, how is it that we can transport gas to all of these power plants and all of these homes and all of these industries and not have the disruptions that you would think you would get from something being just in time?
Well, I think, first of all, the concern is a good one. I mean, we're learning a lot about resilience right now, and we're paying a lot of attention to resilience. And so the idea of having a diverse set of sources with different sorts of profiles, whether that's gas, that's wind, that's solar, et cetera, I think it's very prudent. On the other hand, the gas pipeline system is a massive battery. I mean, you can basically think of it as a massive source of energy storage. And then finally, most gas plants have backup. They have a liquid fuel backup, just in case that type of thing does happen. In fact, during the when we had the polar vortex in the Northeast a few years ago, and gas plants didn't get gas, a lot of them went over they switched over to running on the liquid fuel.
Yeah, so that liquid fuel in New York, at least, was oil, right? It was cheaper.
Yeah,
it's
more polluting.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was cheaper to buy oil than it was natural gas during that vortex. I think it was January of 2015, if I'm not mistaken, so somewhere right in there. But I think we learned a lot of lessons during that time period. So as you think about natural gas and its future in power plants, I mean, you see states like California and others moving away. I mean, you mentioned earlier that Europe and the U.S., you know, we've got this flat order for gas turbines. Are we going to see gas continue to decline and eventually not be used here, you think, one day?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think what I would say more generally is we will continue to see fuels of some kind. Those fuels could be natural fossil fuels like gas and oil, but increasingly they're going to have to be coupled to carbon capture. And so the extent to which we use carbon capture as a means for utilizing existing hydrocarbons is going to be a function of technology cost curves. On the other hand, what we're going to increasingly see happening is basically decoupling the source of the energy from how we're carrying it. If you think about the U.S., we have several trillion dollars of basically energy carrier systems. It's like internal plumbing. It's power lines, transmission and distribution systems. We have 2 million miles of gas and oil pipelines. And that's basically just carrying energy from the source to the user. So what we're going to also see is basically using maybe electric power, for example, wind power at off-peak times, to make a gaseous fuel that will then get transported to a user. So gaseous fuels will continue to be used. Today, they're used for about 60% of energy carrying, electricity for about 40%. But what exactly those gaseous fuels will evolve?
Hold that thought. And when we come back, I want to dive in a little bit more about resiliency, about how natural gas has helped states like Georgia achieve some of its environmental temporary goals. And we'll talk maybe a little bit about Fukushima and that Japanese accident we mentioned earlier. I'm Tim Echols. You're listening to Energy Matters. We'll be right back. Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
Hey, this is Tim Echols. We talk all the time on Energy Matters about buying a used EV instead of a new one. Let someone else pay the depreciation. BMVW Auto Sales, one of our show sponsors, can fix you up. Go to their website at ev-hybrid.com to see the ever-changing inventory. BMVW has every brand, every type of EV, and they'll even let you test drive it for 3 days, show you how to charge it and drive it for maximum performance. That's ev-hybrid.com. ev-hybrid.com.
This episode of Energy Matters is sponsored by BMVW Auto Sales.
COVID-19 has changed everything, even buying a car. BMVW Auto Sales, one of our show sponsors, not only sanitizes every car, but you can buy it online and they'll trailer it to your home anywhere in Georgia and surrounding states. They've used electric cars, plug-in hybrids, and traditional hybrids. Check out the inventory at ev-hybrid.com. That's ev-hybrid.com. They have a 3-day loaner period as well if you want to make sure electric works for you. Check them out at ev-hybrid.com.
We've been talking about bears and Alaska and Cincinnati and Georgia Tech so much, we haven't even bothered to mention Twitter, Casey. The show's at Matters Radio. Where are you, Casey?
I'm at Casey Boyce.
Yeah, and I'm at Tim Echols. Tim, they allow you guys at Georgia Tech to have a Twitter account over there? Y'all do that?
I do. It's T. Lewin 1.
T. Lewin. Spell that for our audience.
L-I-E-U-W-E-N. T. Lewin 1.
So he's got some cool stuff posted, and we'll maybe get him to post something about maybe a picture of a black bear. Tim, we were talking in the break about this island that you worked on that summer that you were one of the summers that you were in Alaska with a lot of black bears. I mean, that would have scared me to death. I guess you get used to it.
Yeah, you get used to it. They give you a lot of training. I worked on an island called Kuyu Island, which has the largest black bear density in the world. We probably had 15 to 20 bear encounters every day, and our voices were hoarse because we talked loudly and sang everywhere we went.
Bears not like singing?
Well, we would talk loudly because you don't want to jump one. You wanted them to know you were coming. And every now and then you'd be walking and there'd be this big ruckus and racket right off the side of you because one of them had been sleeping or something and it would just take off. Never had a problem. They were all very easy encounters, but we had a lot of them.
I'm just envisioning you as Grizzly Man.
Yeah, what was that old show, Grizzly Adams, way back in the day before you guys were born? So my son, Joe, who worked for the Coast Guard, who does work for the Coast Guard, was stationed in Alaska and Valdez for 3 years. They, of course, you know, were out on the water regularly, you know, catching fish, you know, getting on boats of fishermen. And of course, on the weekend, you know, going to all these beautiful sights and seeing bear and reindeer and elk and moose and just about everything. I mean, people get up there and they never want to leave in Alaska. Not the case for my son, but for a lot of people.
Yeah, it was great. And same thing on the weekends. You know, we'd bum a ride on a boat with somebody. We'd go out and catch halibut or catch salmon. A lot of fun.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, tell us about this Strategic Energy Institute at Georgia Tech. that you're working on, working in, and how it operates and how it's funded and some of the things that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so I serve, one of my roles at Georgia Tech is I serve as executive director of what we call the Strategic Energy Institute, which is really a system integrator for all the energy R&D we do at Tech. So we have about 1,000 energy researchers at Georgia Tech. We work on nuclear, we work on solar, we work on batteries, smart grid. You know, we're with in collaboration with Georgia Power, we're building this new microgrid, which is both an operational microgrid but also a research test bed. Work on policy, economics.
And Tim, before you go on real quick, what is a microgrid? Can you help our listeners understand like what that is that you guys are building there?
Yeah, so it's actually right near the new Coda High Rise in Midtown, and the idea there is it supplies power for electric vehicle charging or for buildings, and it can be connected to the larger grid, but it can also be what we call islanded. And but it's in essence a self-sustained source of power and distribution for the Midtown community.
So you've got your own generation within this, and you can either, you know, use it on site or you can export it if you need to.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that explanation. What else do you do at Strategic
Casey,
Energy Institute?
Hey, Casey, before we get away from the microgrid, I just want to give a shout out to my fellow commissioners, because we approve pilot projects. The utility, they don't like to go all in on things until they're proven. And so we use pilot projects to test various things, from special energy efficiency programs to second life EV batteries to, in this case, a microgrid at Georgia Tech. And, you know, these microgrids are all the rage. As we talked about before, batteries are an important part of resolving issues created by renewable energies on the grid. And so using a microgrid, maybe in conjunction with a gas turbine or in conjunction with solar, it's really helping companies, institutions, organizations be somewhat energy independent. But I think it's more about resiliency, isn't it, Tim? It's more about that than breaking away from the utility.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a resiliency play. And, you know, there's just lots. Every community has its own sort of generation profile and its own set of users. And so there's a lot of need just to understand how these grids interact with just the local community they're working with, which has their own load profiles and their own needs.
Casey, we've talked about these homes, like this townhome development, that another pilot that we approved for Georgia Power, where three-story townhomes, all of them have solar on the roof, all of them have Tesla battery walls in the garage, all of them have a switch that allows them to be able to isolate the third floor during an outage and have the air condition, have a working refrigerator, have a working toilet, to be able to basically go up there, you know, when all the lights are down for everybody else in that entire complex, that third floor, mm-hmm. is operational. I mean, Casey, that's kind of a microgrid in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of terms out there, right? So, like, there's microgrids, nanogrids. I'm sure there are technical definitions for each of these, and I'm sure Tim Lewin can school us on that. But yeah, I mean, I think the point is that, you know, the ability to be self-sufficient, particularly when you've got some sort of generation on site, right? So I look at a lot of the solar energy that's been installed by homeowners in the state of Georgia, and particularly with the solarized group buy programs like Atlanta ran a couple of years ago, a lot of folks are putting batteries in with their solar. And I can tell you, because I've tried to, you know, make the numbers work, it is not an economic decision. Not even close to an economic decision. It is a decision that homeowners make because they've got something on their roof that produces power, and they want to have that resiliency when the power goes out, if we have a hurricane come through or a bad storm or things like that. And it sounds like, you know, Tim Lewin, this is same idea, larger scale, and maybe a little bit more flexibility given the number of kind of potential generation sources and demand sources within the grid.
Yeah, and I think it's important to recognize that, you know, with energy systems, there's not just one thing that makes it a good energy system, right? You're worried about its environmental impact, you're worried about its resiliency, about the cost of the energy, and you're trying to balance those things. You know, there's always trade-offs, and that's what makes life interesting.
Tim, I was at the MIT Energy Conference, and I was on a on a panel. They needed a regulator. So I was up in Boston doing this. And in the green room before the panel, there was one of the panelists was from Schneider Electric. And they were talking about some of the microgrids. This guy was talking in private to me about some of the microgrids that they were doing and how that some utilities felt threatened by them because, in fact, they were going to businesses and basically saying, hey, work with us. We'll get you off the grid. We'll make you resilient, but you won't have to buy that electricity from this power company anymore. And that was the first time I had heard that there were companies that were actually trying to do that and kind of bypass a territorial act. But, I mean, is that something that's coming where companies, entire companies, might have, you know, a gas turbine over here and solar over there and some batteries, and they're not buying their electricity anymore?
You know, that's a really interesting question because you hear answers all over the map. But all I'll say is it's a really strong function of local electricity prices. Obviously, as local prices go up, it drives those types of incentives up. And it's also a big function of the scale of the user. You know, industrial companies and major industrial facilities, you know, have almost always provide their own power for exactly those reasons.
You take the biomass business and you look at what's happening out there, they're producing a lot of their own electricity, right? They're shaving the bark off those trees. They're using it to produce electricity. They're using that black liquor, they call it, out of the trees. And they're burning any and everything that they can in order to save money, because it's not necessarily for them about resiliency. It's really more about economics, right?
Yeah, that's right. If I can just go back just to, I wanted to make one other point about sort of what we do at Georgia Tech. So in addition to do a lot of sort of R&D on far out stuff, I just want to emphasize, we do a lot in just sort of economic development and spinning out companies. You know, as we were talking about the microgrid, it made me think about one of our startups called Prosumer Grid, which is sort of visioning and architecting what this future distributed system where power producers, you have both power producers and power consumers. We're doing quite a bit in cybersecurity of the grid. We just had one of our energy storage companies valued at about $1 billion. For a while, a Georgia Tech spinoff was the largest US-born manufacturer of photovoltaic panels. So that's a big deal for us, is just kind of pushing that innovation out into the marketplace.
Yeah, when we come back, I want us to get into a little bit more about what you see happening in the future, Dr. Lewin. You know, as you look at all these different technologies, I mean, what's going to be feasible for the future? And I mean, you made a point that in places where electricity is expensive, then you have companies like Schneider Electric coming in there offering these microgrids, and it becomes affordable. All the more reason for us to be careful in Georgia and to keep our rates as low as possible. So we're going to bring Dr. Lewin back one more segment, Casey, and finish out this discussion. I'm Tim Eccles. You're listening to Energy Matters. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Energy Matters would like to thank Gas South for its support of the show. Gas South has a no-deposit policy and offers some of the lowest per-therm rates in the state. Use the promo code MATTERS for a special deal. Gas South, the difference is good.
Creative Solar USA is a Georgia-based turnkey installer of innovative solar panel systems. They're dedicated to energy solutions for both your home and business. With their NABCEP certified installers, they ensure their clients receive the highest quality of solar energy systems in the industry. Contact CSUSA today at 770-485-7438 or go to creativesolarusa.com.
Hey, this is Tim Eccles. We talk all the time on Energy Matters about buying a used EV instead of a new one. Let someone else pay the depreciation. BMVW Auto Sales, one of our show sponsors, can fix you up. Go to their website at ev-hybrid.com to see the ever-changing inventory. BMVW has every brand, every type of EV, and they'll even let you test drive it for 3 days, show you how to charge it and drive it for maximum performance. That's ev-hybrid.com. ev-hybrid.com.
Hey, this is Tim Echols. We're back for our final segment today on Energy Matters. My co-host, Casey Boyce. Casey, how's it going?
I'm good. This is a great conversation this morning, Tim.
Man, we got a talented guy, Dr. Tim Lewin from Cincinnati, spent time in Alaska and Idaho in the summers, got his graduate degree from Georgia Tech, been there ever since. Dr. Lewin, great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Man, you guys, you're kind of in-town guys. Casey, you're in Decatur, and Dr. Lewin, you live on the north side in Atlanta. Even though you're on 4 acres, you're kind of in a forest in a city. It's kind of unusual.
Yeah, I guess, what do they call Atlanta? The tree city. Yeah, we have a really, really nice area.
And you guys compost out there. You've got chickens. You've had 3 electric cars. What's it like, you know, having chickens in the city?
Yeah, well, you know, I enjoy gardening. I really get a big charge out of growing what I eat. I don't know. My parents always had a huge garden. You know, we have chickens. They lay eggs. So having a garden, eating our own blueberries, eating our own beans last night for dinner. Our tomatoes are just about ready. So, yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun.
Casey, you've heard my bad luck boat stories, and I've had a lot of, I mean, people that listen to our show know that I'm pretty traumatized based on my life experiences, but I had a bad chicken experience as well because we were...
What is a bad chicken experience,
well,
Tim?
Well, we were living out in the country. I thought, you know, we could try country life, right? My wife ordered these little baby chicks, right? So they come, and I had this neighbor who had this chicken that had escaped from his chicken house, and he said, hey, any of these you catch you can have. So we caught this free chicken, brought him to our house. Little did we know that the chicken had a virus, right? And it gave all our baby chicks this virus, and they, you know, and one at a time, they just eventually all died. And we called the University of Georgia vet school, and they said, well, bring us one, we'll examine it. And sure enough, they had the deadly Merrick virus or something like that. And they said, did you have the chick vaccinated? And I said, vaccinated? That's a thing? And he said, yeah, it just costs 1 penny. You just tell the chicken order people that you order from that you want it vaccinated for the Merrill virus or Merrick virus or whatever it's called. And, well, nobody told me that I need to vaccinate my chicken. So, you know, that was it for chickens. And then we found this big snake living in one of the, you know, in the other chicken's little bin thing, and about scared our whole family to death, this giant snake.
Holy
that was
smokes.
In there gobbling up eggs or whatever. So I've just had a bad experience with chickens.
I thought you were going to tell me that you got attacked by a chicken. You know, that does
That's
happen.
That's what I was thinking, too.
Yeah. So here, Dr. Lewin goes to Alaska seeing 15 black bears per day, singing his way through the forest, never gets attacked, and I can't even survive with a chicken out there in rural Jackson County.
So, Tim, I'm thinking we should get away from animal husbandry for a moment and get back to energy.
Yeah.
Sounds
That's
great.
What the show's
Sounds
all about,
great.
Right?
Yeah. That's what right, I can okay. do. That's what I, all right. That's what I can do. So, Casey, where are we going here on this last segment?
Yeah. So, Dr. Lewin, before we let you go on this last segment, I would love to get your thoughts on this. So, in the late 90s, I read this book that made the case that the hydrogen economy was just around the corner. And it made this argument that said, you know, the history of energy in human existence has been, you know, removing carbon molecules from what we burn. So going from, you know, wood to coal to natural gas, and then we're going to get rid of all of the carbon entirely and just burn hydrogen, right? And of course, the hydrogen economy has not materialized. And if you ask folks, it's still right around the corner. But one of the things that has fundamentally changed, and we've talked about it a little bit in previous episodes of Energy Matters, is that, you know, renewables produce energy when the sun is shining or the wind is blowing, not necessarily when people need to use energy. And so there are folks who are currently working on taking some of that excess renewable energy and essentially what they call electrolyzing water, right, creating hydrogen out of it. And you could potentially put that in the pipelines. You talked about all of the pipelines that we have in the country. You could potentially burn it in turbines. But I'm just an amateur at this, right? Like I'm a political science major, right? So you're an engineer, you're a doctor. Like what's the potential for this going forward?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, it's important to realize there is no conceptual problem with hydrogen economy, with utilizing hydrogen for energy. really the challenges lie in the fact that we have an energy infrastructure today, which happens to look like something, and what would it cost to get to where you'd want it to be? So not to sound too much like a college professor, but let me just back up for a minute and just say the hydrogen would be an example of what we would call an energy carrier. It's like electricity. It's not the source of energy. It's just a means of carrying energy from one source to another. And so really hydrogen you could use hydrogen, you could use methanol, you could use synthetic natural gas. You could use a whole host of basically energy carriers. So one sort of myth I want to bust here is that to decarbonize society that you can't use a carbon atom in your energy carrier. There's no reason whatsoever that you can't use, let's say, gasoline that looks exactly like we use today, but you would rather than pulling it from a hydrocarbon from the ground, you might pull CO2 out of the air and combine it with water, chemical magic happens, and out pops a synthetic gasoline. And so there would be no zero net carbon emitted into the atmosphere. It would be like a tree. You know, trees, they pull CO2 out of the air. When they die, they put it back in the air, and it's a cycle. And so hydrogen just happens to be an energy carrier that doesn't have a carbon atom. So I just wanted to point that out, as decarbonized society does not mean that we don't continue to use carbon-containing energy carriers. Let me just say one more thing about hydrogen. So again, no conceptual reason we can't use hydrogen. Again, the challenge is we have 2 million plus miles of pipelines today, and you can only put a certain fraction of hydrogen in the pipeline without replacing it.
Interesting. So you can put it in the existing pipeline, just not, you know, wholesale kind of change, right?
Exactly.
And can you burn that hydrogen in existing natural gas turbines, or would we need to, you know, perform significant upgrades on that? Kind of what does that look like, and what does your research indicate there?
Yeah, so no significant conceptual challenge with burning that hydrogen in existing gas-fired turbines. If it's a newer, higher tech gas turbine, the fraction of hydrogen that you can burn will be limited. I mean, even today, every gas turbine that's out there in the field can take, let's say, 5% hydrogen without any mods, but then you'd start looking at replacing burners if you wanted to go to higher percentages.
Wow. As we think about reducing the amount of methane that we burn by just simply adding 5% hydrogen, I think a lot of times folks think it's either all or nothing. We use this fuel exclusively, but what you're saying is that you can have these kind of hybrid mixtures and it serve a good purpose.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's a pretty clear path toward a certain fraction of the hydrogen economy. And I'll just make up a number, but it's probably around 20%. Once you start getting above 20% in the natural gas pipeline, you have to start worrying about how hydrogen affects the structural integrity of the pipeline. And but yeah, you can put in 0.5% today and 1% tomorrow and 1.5% the following day and start gradually ramp it up.
Yeah. I was talking with some folks in the trucking industry, and they were saying that you could bubble it into diesel fuel and reduce the amount of diesel, kind of like you're doing, you know, with this methane, where it would be maybe 95% diesel and 5% hydrogen bubbled in there. I mean, have you heard about that? And it sounds like the same kind of concept.
Yeah, and you know, the transportation industry is a whole different deal, because you know their fuels are liquid fuel that have different sets of composition. But the general idea that you can mix and match different types of fuels, I mean, we do it today with ethanol at the pump, right? And you know, a lot of the work that we're doing right now has to do, for example, with the aircraft industry, is how do you inject more alternative or bio-derived fuels into the sort of the aircraft fuel, what we call sustainable aviation fuels?
Well, I think this is really good news, Tim, because, you know, we've talked about you're helping organize the EV Corral at the Petit Le Mans in October. We're both EV drivers. But this idea that you can, you know, use the carbon molecules and create synthetic gasolines or mixtures of fuels and still have engines, you know, fundamentally I'm a gearhead, so I'm glad to hear that we can live in a more sustainable world and still have you know, a high RPM V8 whale going down the track.
Yeah, Dr. Lewin, just in our final minute here, you know, what are you excited about when you think about energy in the future, and at Georgia Tech, some of the students you're meeting, some of the ideas, what What do you see the future looking like for us in our country when it comes to energy?
Well, I'm very excited about just the general trends I see. I mean, renewable energy is here to stay. It's not alternative energy anymore. It's a significant part of what we're doing. Costs are coming down. You know, we're seeing electric vehicles becoming cost competitive. So both our environmental impact, we're educating a generation that really cares about this issue and is going to tackle this issue head on. And we're going to solve this issue. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm Tim Echols. I'm at Tim Echols on Twitter. Casey?
I'm at Casey Boyce on Twitter.
And Dr. Lewin, where are you guys at Twitter?
I am at TLewin1.
TLewin1. And spell Lewin for us.
That's TLIEUWEN1.
It's been great having Dr. Lewin on our show today. He teaches and researches at Georgia Tech. Casey, another great show in the books.
Absolutely.
Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We really appreciate you supporting and listening to Energy Matters. I'm Tim Echols, your host. I hope you have a great rest of the day.
Support for Energy Matters comes from Sterling Planet. The folks at Sterling Planet want to help you meet your environmental and business goals with renewable energy. From understanding RECs, or renewable energy certificates, to a carbon offset plan to innovative white tags energy efficiency certificates, they can help you navigate the corporate green energy world. See more at sterlingplanet.com.
The electric car revolution is coming, and the choices are growing. GEM cars are everywhere. You've seen these low-speed electric vehicles on college campuses, downtown Atlanta streets, and resort islands like St. Simons and Jekyll. GEM cars are street legal, equipped with seatbelts, headlights, and a tag, and can operate on roads with speed limits of 35 miles per hour or less. If you want to know more about these electric cars and trucks, six-passenger shuttles, mobile repair service, or full vehicle wraps, go to GEMCarService.com. That's GEMCarService.com.
Tim Echols here for Solar Sun World. No doubt you've seen solar panels popping up all over Georgia. If you want the precision of German engineering when it comes to solar, Solar Sun World is for you. The folks there understand the complexities of solar and how to make it work, from tax credits to inverters to accelerated depreciation. They'll unpack it all. They've been in business for over 25 years. To find out more, go to solarsunworld.com. That's solarsunworld.com.